Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And it's just great having you tonight. It's a little different view this evening. I kind of scooted up a little bit, had the family all in for Christmas, and I just haven't taken the tree down and all the other things. So I thought I'd just try it this way for tonight or the next 2 weeks. Want to welcome you to the program. This is the last radio program for 2024. Wow, the last one. Next year, next week will be in 2025. And I hope and pray that you had an awesome Christmas. And we're going to end the year with a bang, with a person that's going to have a story that's going to absolutely lay you out, that's going to inspire you, that's going to cause you to go into a different way of maybe looking at what's happened to you in your own life. And there's several ways to get involved in the program tonight. And it's 888-627-6008. That'll get you right to the wonderful staff at BBS Radio. And Thomas will answer that phone with his radio voice, and he will patch you right into our guest and myself. Or you can get right on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. It looks like it's up and running. There's people there. You can comment on that during the commercial. I'll check it. Or you can just text me on my personal cell phone number. Yes, my personal cell phone number, 832-396-6525. And millions of people have that number right now, so they can text me all night long, and I get a lot of texts. So feel free to text during the program, and I will pass that question or comment on to the guest. Tell you what, we've had some awesome guests this last year. 2025 is promising to be one of the best years ever. We're going to start off the next few weeks with a little mini series with the author of the international bestseller, Child Called It. Dave Pelzer is going to be back with us for a couple, two or three programs. And we're going to end that series with him talking about, believe it or not, comedy. He is involved in comedy. And with the life that he has had, if you've read The Child Called It, for him to have anything humorous to say, I want to hear it. But he has found a great joy, a great peace in being able to share that side of him in a different way. So we're going to be talking about that one time in January. We'll have him on, and then we'll have the comedy show, the comedy discussion in February. So we've already had him scheduled, and the beginning of the year is going to kick off with a bang. So you don't want to miss a program. We always say that if you just give us about 45 to 50 minutes of your night on Sunday night live, we promise you we will at least give you something that you can use that will inspire you, that will strengthen you, that will maybe draw you closer to some wisdom, something that you can use with yourself or one of your friends. But you want to make sure you always have your notepad and a piece of paper next to you. And we're going to try to share with you some things that you can use in life. And speaking of things you can use, this book's getting ready to come out in the next few weeks, called Embracing Your Scars. It's my latest book. So I'm doing the finishing touches on that, and hopefully that will be out I was hoping to have it out by Christmas, but thanks for playing. That didn't work. But I always, and we talk about this here in a minute about how to look at the new year. I try to set goals, but if I don't set goals, I'll never get it done. So when I set a goal, it pushes me and forces me to act on it. So I always say, normally a couple, 2 or 3 months before the book's out, oh, it's going to be out in a few weeks. And that forces me to keep at it because writing a book is not easy, and it's tedious. And sometimes you can go, I'll put that off to another day and never get around to it. But in the next few weeks, this will be off at the printers. And I am going to finish that up this week between the Christmas and the New Year holiday before I have to go back to work at Baylor College of Medicine. So I'm going to take some time to polish that up, get the picture just right. And it'll be a full color magazine format book with a whole bunch of articles in it. And I've had people over the past years tell me, oh, I don't read books. I just can't do that. It's not in me. So I took that as a cue to come up with, well, how am I going to write a book to where the people that need to read it can read it and want to read it? So my first book, I made the font bigger than normal. I made these chapters really short. I call it a bathroom read book, to where you can actually read a couple chapters while you're in the bathroom or in the bathtub. That worked a little bit, but this one, this third book out, I'm going to have full color pictures. It's going to look like a magazine, and you're just going to read the articles in the magazine, not knowing that you're actually, by the end of the magazine, reading an entire book. But it'll look like a magazine with a lot of pictures, a lot of sub stories inside it, with a lot of lists on how to do things, some of the things that we share on the radio show. So that'll be coming out fairly soon, and I'll let you know more about that later. Tell you what, as we go into a new year, what's this week do to us? Here we are. I have a Christmas tree over here. Have Christmas ornaments here. Everything's still met. What do you do after Christmas and between New Year's besides eat leftovers and try to clean up the mess? What's it for? What can we benefit the most out of this time? And I really want to just kind of share with you before we bring our guest on. There's a few things that I try to do every year. One of them, I do not do a resolution. Some people do, and successful for them. It's not for me. But that's up to you totally. But I do like to do a few things. I just want to share with you what I personally do in my own journal is I try to review the past year, what I did right, what I did wrong, what I wish I had done later, better. What I wish I had not done. And then I try to audit my life. Look for work and life balance. And sometimes that's tough. I am a workaholic. That gives me, I guess, a reason for still being alive. It gives me purpose. At least I think it does. But there's more to life than work. I know my life isn't made just to push papers at Baylor. I know it's not that. So I'm trying to audit that this week to make sure I have a good work-life balance. I also encourage you to put some goals down for the next coming year. Put them on your calendar. If you want to accomplish something, if you want to take a trip, if you want to write a book, put a target date. I've always told my kids as they was going through grade school, hey, shoot for an A and get a C is better than not having a goal at all and getting a D. So, make that goal attainable, but set it pretty high to where it challenges us to rise to the goal. So you want to have some type of 2025 goals, maybe two or three a month, mini goals, and a couple big ones throughout the year. And then plan your year. look at, hey, this is what I'm going to be doing in June. This is what I'm going to be doing in September. This is what I hope to be doing, if I'm still alive, in August and September and in November, December, and try to plan out the year. When I have a speaking calendar, I just say yes to almost everybody and put it on the calendar. And then I look at it and go, wow, that looks like a whole bunch of a mess. I got to do better than that this year. Try to plan it out more. Try to plan family trips amongst some of those speaking engagements, but plan your 2025. Don't just let it happen to you randomly. I think it's going to be a robust year. I think it's going to be an interesting year in this world. I think we're going to see a lot of things happening. I think spiritually, we're going to see the world starting to turn in such a way that we can tell our days are numbered in the final end days of life. I believe the rapture of the church could be any day soon, but it's going to be exciting in those last days. And then also, I don't know if you've ever done this or not, but I believe it's a book I have on my stand over there. John Gordon, I believe, wrote this. If I'm wrong, somebody correct me. He came up with the word, one word of the year. And make it your word, if it's hope or peace or whatever it is, come up with the word that you want to make as your motto for the week, for the year. And just have that single word and post it everywhere that you know. Put it on the cover of your phone, your wallpaper of your desktop. And let that remind you that that's something you want to either obtain or work towards, or become. The book that's coming out is Embracing Your Scars. So maybe embrace, stop shunning and ignoring and hiding everything from your past. Maybe you need to embrace what happened to you and then propel it to something greater and better than what you ever thought it could be, and turn that negative into a positive. And we're going to have a guest on tonight that is telling her story publicly for the very first time. This is huge. This is a time that everybody in the room ought to be silent and you just listen, because the courage that it takes, the champion inside to finally say, I'm ready to walk through that drape that may have been dark on one side into a limelight where the lights are flashing and the lights are bright, and everybody around the world is going to hear the story. What are they going to think? What are they going to do with that story? How are they going to respond? Are things that's going through our guest's mind tonight? So use that as a motivation of what do you want to accomplish this year. I have a few others, but I think I've spoke long enough, because I really want to get to our program tonight. 888-627-6008. But I do want to let you know, in 2025, the best is yet to come. And I believe that for me, and I believe that absolutely for you. And I know it's going to be that way for me, because I got one of the best Christmas presents ever. One of those Christmas presents, when you open it up, you start bawling. I opened it up and I saw this little picture, Merry Christmas. And then it was Andre Bocelli tickets to see him sing with the Houston Symphony on June 12th. And I bawled like a baby, because why? That is on my bucket list before I die. I want to hear him sing Nisum Dorma live, and I'm going to get to do that on June 12th. So that's worth fighting for, to be able to stay up and stay healthy and be there. And those are the kind of things. Create a bucket list of things that you want to just check off your bucket this coming year. Okay, I'm done. Tonight, we have a wonderful person that's going to be on with us tonight. Delia Castillo is someone that I've met. We're going to find out how we met here just shortly. But she has a story that I believe she moved during her childhood, I'm trying to find this in the paragraph, 14 different schools by the time she went to high school graduation. And if that wasn't pressure enough, if that wasn't stress enough, she had the mask on, that she was a smiley and bright face, as you're going to see her. Thomas, go ahead and bring her on so everybody can see the smile that I'm talking about. And but she was hiding under a dark cloud, a cloud that was had abuse in it, had pain, had hurt, had confusion. And we talked the other day, and I offered her to be on the program this evening. And I just want to take my hat off if I have one on and say, Delia, thank you for sharing tonight. And I am so glad you're on the program this evening. And we'll let you tell the world about you and your story. But welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you so much. I just want to start in the spirit of gratitude, for being here, and I feel so touched and inspired by your story, and that's what's giving me the courage to be in this moment to share a little bit about my story. I think it can be easy with trauma to compare trauma stories, and having read your book, immediately I was diminishing my trauma because your trauma was very impactful for me. We met because you came to where my place of employment, the university where I work, and you gave a presentation on sex trafficking. And the honesty that you brought to the conversation, sharing your personal story, just putting yourself out there the way you did, it really touched me. And it inspired me, and it kind of lit a fire under me. And I said, if this guy can do this, I can do this. I can tell my story.
Well, that's fantastic. And I tell you what, that's the hope and the dream that I know you have with tonight, and I've had for years, 5, 6 years since I wrote the book. If it can cause, motivate, encourage one person to do what you're doing tonight, it was worth the book. So thank you for letting me know at least one person read it and is encouraged to share. How long had you kept this secret inside of you, even though this is the first time publicly you've shared it?
Yeah, and I think we have a similar time trajectory. I'm 51, and I started therapy about 5, 6 years ago. It took me about 2.5 years of therapy to even begin to talk about the most difficult memories and the most difficult experiences. So it's been quite a process. I think, a lot of childhood trauma survivors, they cope really well for a period of time. But there reached a point in my life where I realized I wasn't living the fullest authentic self that I could. I felt that I wasn't giving the best of myself to my relationships, to myself. And I had a point where I had a crossroads and I said, well, I could go ahead and keep on with this coping life that I've been actually doing pretty well. I got a good marriage, healthy children, good job. And I could kind of keep that part of my life buried, or I could open Pandora's box and let it all, all that out, which was terrifying. So I had some time where I took to really consider that because I felt I didn't want to impact my children negatively. I didn't want to impact my marriage negatively. It's a scary thing to get to that point where you're like, okay, am I really going to open this up? Because it's very scary to, this experience is, it's not, I didn't feel that I was going to have good control over it. Once it was open, I felt like it was just going to be open and I had to be prepared for that. So,
Was
yeah.
there anything that caused you to make that decision? Because it sounds like if you're 51, maybe around 47, 48,
Yeah.
you decided you'd start therapy, something like that. Was there
I did.
something that caused you to say, hey, wait, enough is enough. I'm not sleeping, or my health is going down down the tubes. Was there something that interacted with you
Yeah.
emotionally that said, wait, I have to get control on this before it's gone?
I think it was a few things. One of them was the ACEs. I read about the ACEs study, and that really affected me. I was like, man, this is because I was in medicine going into, nursing school myself, and I was fascinated by the effects of disease and trauma. And there's a wonderful project called the Compassion Prison Project that I was following, which is these, prisoners who had, severe childhood trauma, and this wonderful woman was helping them sort of process, their trauma later in life. And so I started to get interested in that. And I said, well, I'm going to do the ACEs, I'm going to take that test and see where I fall, because I knew I'd had an imperfect childhood. I think, I put it in this category of pretty bad, but not the worst, right? You kind of That's one of the survival techniques that we do as children, is like we diminish the trauma because for us that's normal. Growing up in that environment was normal for us. And then you realize as you leave home and you become adult, well, maybe that wasn't so normal. And then you have to try to figure that out later. So I took the ACEs and I scored a 7. And so I thought, well, that can't be right, right? So I kind of second guessed it, and I put that, filed it away. Went back later that year, took it again, 7. And I thought, well, maybe I'm not looking at this through true glasses, through the truth. So I started to really kind of examine more about what had happened. I felt like probably what I did at some point is I cut off the first 20 years of my life and I buried it real deep. And I said, okay, from this point on, I'm going to live a really good life. I'm going to be a good daughter, a good friend, a good partner, a good mother, a good worker, a good nurse. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to be a good human. And I was, and I am. But I could feel these limitations. I got high blood pressure. I had all kinds of physical health issues, PCOS, endometriosis, infertility, dysmenorrhea, menorrhagia, all the things, and high blood pressure, had to get on medication. I eat well. I exercise. I don't smoke. I didn't drink. So I think that the body was talking to me. I was having nightmares that I was being chased by a man and getting cornered every time. And I would make these sounds. My husband would tell me, you're making these dying animal sounds in your sleep. And I didn't know I was doing that. So it was all coming to the surface in manifesting in different ways. So I said, okay, I'm going to start therapy. And I still had young children at home when I started therapy. They were, some my children, I have 3 children. They're all 4 years apart. They're 24, 20, and 16 now. But at the time, they were a little bit younger, and I thought, I don't want to damage them with my trauma. I wanted to protect them from that. And I'd worked so hard to do that. And that was my biggest fear in opening this up. And so I proceeded so slowly with therapy. I would start and I would stop, and I would start and I would stop, and I would tell my therapist, this is as far as I can go right now. So it was a process to get there.
Is your family listening tonight?
They're not, but they are aware that my children are just now, especially my older two, understanding that mama went through some stuff that was really hard. My mother and I are close, and it's complicated. And I can kind of tell you a little bit about some of the things that I went through, and that will help people maybe understand the complex relationship with the mother. But my mom and I are working on healing together. So that's a progress in, the therapeutic progress of being able to heal, not only personally, but to heal with somebody who was there. I've healed so much with my brother. My brother and I are closer than we've ever been because we're telling the truth, because we're talking about what happened instead of pretending like it didn't happen. So yeah, it's the scariest thing in the process was talking about the trauma itself. And once I decided to make that decision, I talked to my husband, I talked to my partner. I said, okay, I'm gonna go to this place, and I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm hoping that, God willing, we can do this in a graceful way, and that, you know, it's not gonna impact everybody, and I'm not gonna bring everyone into this chaos. But I said, for my own soul and my own future and my health, I need to start this healing. And I need to tell the truth. And so that's, you know, that's really been now, I would say, about 3 years of really just truth telling, you know, and family members and, you know, therapy and writing and, you know, really telling the truth. And I feel this sense of lightness, liberation. That's, you know, it's a process that's coming, you know, and evolving.
And the response from your husband, those closest to you, after you discuss this with them, did it surprise you, their response?
You know, it's hard for the partner. I think that any, or a friend or family member, I think anyone who is close to someone who is facing their trauma, it's not an easy place to be, because my husband didn't have that experience growing up. He had loving parents. He had food on the table, clothes on his back. He had a mother who was there every day when he got home from school, got up and cooked him his breakfast. He had a strong father. He, you know, they had their challenges, but there was a stability and a strength and a consistency. And so I can't, you know, I couldn't take him and say, you know, look, understand this. It's very hard for the partner to understand. So I think it was a process. And I think it really only maybe like 6 months ago did he really go, oh, I get it. I hear how awful that must have been. It took him a while. Yeah.
There's a process that they have to go through too.
I think so. Yeah. And it's not really reasonable, at least for me, I didn't feel it's not reasonable for me to expect my partner to understand my trauma. I can do my best to say, hey, this is what I need from you. Or this is a trigger for me. This is, you know, these are the therapeutic tools we learn, is how to take care of ourselves. This is kind of a new thing, because I was really good at masking. I was really good at surviving, thriving, high resilience, right? So my resilience is through the roof. And so nobody really, when I started asking for what I needed, I think it made everybody a little uncomfortable at first. So that was an adjustment.
Was there any, we have like a minute or two before the first break.
Yeah.
Was there any triggers that when you were triggered, your response was, so it didn't, wasn't revealed in you because you were still masking? How did you respond to some of the triggers in such a way that you, did you go be alone? Did you act out in anger? Did you take it out on someone else? Did you go spend a lot of money shopping? Was there some kind of way that you coped with the triggers when they came up before you wanted everybody to know, hey, wait, I have issues. These are triggers.
So before I identified the triggers and before I knew how to cope with them, I internalized. I just swallowed. I internalized, and it made me sick. You know, it made me ill. Once I started learning, like, for example, people talking loud, people arguing, people, you know, kind of a chaotic environment where people are not being respectful. I don't want to be there. Now I will leave the room. I will go outside. I will walk away, and I will just sit, take some deep breaths, take care of myself. And that was huge for me.
Yeah, you got to guard your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, those boundaries are important. Tell you what, on the other side of this break, I want you to take us in
Yeah.
as deep as you want to go into what happened to you, how you made it through it, and then in the last 10 minutes of this final segment, what you would tell other people that are going through it now and masking it and not even convincing themselves they're okay. What do you encourage them to do and give them some of your advice? We're going to do that 888-627-6008. And you do not want to miss this last segment because we're going to find out the story and then we're going to find out how you can overcome this. And look, the sun is shining on the other side of this. So hang with us. We'll be right back after this short commercial break.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. We have Delia with us tonight, and she's sharing her life around the world right now, telling people about what's happened to her and how she made it through it and how where she's at now in that journey that we call life. And Delia, I'd like for you to share, if you would, in as much as you want, what was done, what happened to you, what was your childhood like that caused this to be at 51 going, hey, wait, I had a 7 on the ACEs test.
Yeah, so my parents divorced quite young. They both had multiple relationships over the years. When I was about 7, my mother met a man and started dating a man who later became my stepfather, later within a year. I immediately had all those red flags as a child. Something's not right. Don't like this one. Told my mom. Wasn't listened to, and just didn't feel right about this guy. I had pretty good intuition as a child. I was very imaginative. I was very loving and kind as a child, and I wanted to give my mom the support she deserved. And so, we started a family together, but right off the bat, it just felt something felt off with this person. And he would often gaslight me with my mom. And anytime he had problems with my mom, it was my fault because I wasn't accepting him into the family, that sort of thing. And they sat me down one day, said they were getting married, and I said, I don't want you, I don't, I told my mom, I turned to my mom, I said, I do not want you to marry this man. And he went into a rage, and they got married. So I learned early on I didn't have a voice, and it was if I shared my voice, it wasn't going to be heard. So we ended up moving quite a bit. My mom had a career that took us on the move, and so we were moving a lot. There was a lot of that instability, and my mom traveled for work, so I was home alone a lot with this guy, and he would do things that didn't make sense to me. And I think that's early on, watching porn with me in the room, that kind of stuff, like just Whereas a child, you're like, you think adults aren't supposed to do this. This doesn't feel right, you know, just little things like that, the little cues. But again, it's normal in the context of you don't know that this isn't normal. If something doesn't feel right, but at the same time, you don't know that you know that this is really wrong. So he would rage at me. He would get mad at me. He would he didn't hit me physically, but I never felt safe with him. And then as I think I was probably 10 or 11 years old, he started to spy on me in my room, and he would go out in, you know, at night outside the window of my bedroom, and he would look at me. I didn't know this. My mother told me that she caught him a couple times, or that he had also confessed to her that he was spying on me, and you know, when I was changing or things like that. When my mom told me that, I had a big aha moment, because I'd always felt like somebody was watching me. And in my little child mind, I was like, oh, it's the ghost of my grandmother. You know, like I was trying to make up things to make it feel normal. But he was spying on me, and he was probably watching me more, much more than I was aware of, because my mom had been the one to tell me that she caught him outside. He was up in a tree outside my bedroom window. So things like that went on. There was a lot of drugs. You know, he was a drug abuser. I can remember about being about 12 years old, and I came home from school. And he had a Tupperware container full of different drugs, and he opened it and he showed it to me, and he said, if the police ever come, I want you to go find this and flush it down the toilet. And so not normal things and not safe feelings. As puberty kicked in, then I think things really shifted for him. I think he started looking at me through different eyes and really grooming me, I think is what the behavior was. I didn't know at the time, but kind of grooming me in this way where he could then create scenarios where he could molest me. So the first memory that I have of that was my mom was out of town. I was 13 years old. I suffered from terrible nightmares as a child, the same nightmares that I had all the way up into my 40s when I started therapy, and it was always the same scenario. It was a man chasing me, cornering me. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get away. I had one of these nightmares, and typically when my mother was in town, I would be scared, and I would wake up in the night, and I would go lay next to her in the bed. And then I would just lay there until I felt better, and then I would go back to bed. I forgot my mom was out of town, and I had a terrible nightmare. Got up, went into her room, and then realized that my stepfather was there and my mom wasn't there. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to lay on the corner on the edge of the bed, because I was scared. And so I laid on the edge of the bed just to feel safe for a minute. And he rolled over and started groping my breast. And I remember shock. Like the feeling of shock of like, why are you doing this? Like, so then he like said my mother's name as though he was asleep. And I think he was trying to fake that he was like doing this in his sleep. And I immediately got up. I went to my room, I closed the door, and I was awake all night just feeling this like fear and you know, confusion. You know, 13 years old is a strange age. You're not a woman yet, and you're not a child. So I took that and I buried it, buried it, buried it. We had a few more little instances where he was inappropriate with me, but it wasn't until I was about to move out. I was about to leave home at 16, and I think he realized he had one more shot at getting with me. And I think he was obsessed with me. And so my mom was out of town. He waited till she was out of town on a trip. We were home in this house, and he convinced me to take a drug that I did not know what it was. I'd never taken that before. It was MDMA, it was ecstasy. And he gave it to me. I'd never had that before. I wasn't someone who liked taking drugs. He convinced me that it was, he said, it's really important. I have really something really important I need to say to you, and it's really important that you take this because it will help me be able to say what I need to say to you. And I was scared, and I took this substance, and when it kicked in, it was just getting dark outside, and I felt completely out of control with my ability to navigate that situation. And I thought, well, I just have to stay safe. Like, I just have to protect myself. But under the influence of a drug, I didn't know what to do. And so I thought fawning was a very big thing. I learned about later in therapy that fawning was what I did a lot of, which was to placate my abuser so that I could stay safe. Okay, I'll give you what what you want, what you need so that I can stay safe. And so we were sitting on the couch, and he begins to tell me, I'm in love with you. Ever since you were, started developing, I've been attracted to you. It was this big confession. He had to get all this off his chest. And he said, I think that I can get over this if you just, show me your breasts. And if I can touch your breasts, then I'm going to get over this, which is ludicrous. And I was so scared, and I thought, if I don't let him do this, is he going to attack me? I didn't know what was going to happen. And I was under the influence of this drug that I didn't know anything about. And so I allowed him to look at my breasts, to touch my breasts, and then he pulled back. And I was like, thank God. And then, it just went on for hours and hours. And it was just his obsession with confessing this weird obsession that he'd had. And then he completely exposed himself to me. And I don't know why he felt like he needed to do that. He exposed, himself naked, body, everything. And I was in such shock. I didn't know how to handle that. I asked him to leave the room, and I said, I need to be alone. And thank God he did let me be alone, because that was the most lonely night of my life. I wanted to die. I didn't want to be on the planet anymore. I felt so cold and so alone in such a dark place and so unprotected. And I stayed in that room the rest of the night, and then I never talked about it. I just buried it. And I moved out a month later, and I never looked back. So, it really is incredible how we can bury this stuff. And just like I said, it's like cutting the arm off and going, I've got three good limbs. I don't need that arm. I'm good. Yeah. So that's pretty much the extent. I mean, of course, there's always more to share, but in terms of the sort of the darkness of my trauma, it was compound trauma over a period of, 7 to 16 years old.
Did your mom immediately believe this story when she finally heard it? Or was there like doubt?
It was a process. I found out some really important pieces of the puzzle from my mom that I didn't know. And one of those was that he'd been spying on me. I thought, oh, we're dealing with a sick guy who was attracted to me as I became a teenager. Well, no, if he was spying on me in those previous years, we're talking pedophile here. This is, I was a lot younger than I thought it had started. So she helped me in some ways, but he had also confessed to her, and I was so angry at my mom. Like, that was her opportunity to do something about it. And that was before the incident happened when I was 16, that he confessed to her that he was attracted to me, that he'd spied on me, but they were under the influence of drugs. So that was his manipulation technique, was to use drugs to, I don't know, to manipulate, to hide.
So from 16, you move out to the next 20 years, 25 years. This was a complete secret locked away through the keyhole in the deepest, darkest depths of your heart and soul.
Yes, sir.
When did you decide, hey, wait, we need to let some of this stuff become unburied? We need to dig it up.
Again, it was a quite a slow process, and I've been really kind to myself through it. But I would say, I don't know if you know the story of the labyrinth and the Minotaur, the Greek mythology. So I heard that story. I was hearing someone tell that story, and I was in my 20s, my mid early 20s. And I was listening to this story, and I was imagining this labyrinth, and I was like, oh, I know that place. That's a place that's cold, it's dark, there's no light, there's no warmth, there's no love. I know that labyrinth. I've been there in the middle of that labyrinth. And in the story, Theseus, the way that he gets out of the labyrinth is through a golden thread. And this golden thread, when I was listening to this story, I was like, I know that thread. I recognize that. That's God's love. And it's his love for me. And that is something I've always had. My parents did not raise me, spiritually. They're atheists, agnostic. But I knew that I was loved. And that little golden thread is the thing that I said, if I just follow that, I know there's a path through this pain.
Wow.
If I just follow that, I know there's a way out of this labyrinth. And that has been true every step of the way.
That
That's been
there
holding.
is the outline of your book right there, Julia. There it is, the golden thread or call
Golden
letter.
thread,
Because
yeah.
there it is, to take it from the darkness with that thread all the way through. That is something. And now here we are today. You read this book,
Yes.
you gelled with some of the things. What's a few of the things? We only have about 5, 8 minutes left, but what's some of the few of the things that you said, wait, that was me. I thought I was crazy, but this guy experienced it too. Was there some of those things that just resonated and hit you right between the eyes and go, I thought I was nuts, but it did happen to somebody else.
Yes. And that's such an important question because I do want to share with anyone who's listening right now and who's who is thinking about entering this process of facing the truth and facing that pain and that trauma. Podcasts were so helpful. In particular, I wrote a few down, but there was one called Navigating Narcissism. It's Dr. Ramani Durvasula. There were specific ones I listened to. The Evan Rachel Wood, Jewel, the singer Jewel has a story on there. Lily Bernard, who was one of Bill Cosby's victims. I started to listen to their stories, Elizabeth Smart, these survivors who'd been through pretty intense, dark things. I read a book, Broken, by Shai Kenan. It is unbelievably painful, but through these stories, through your book, through reading about and hearing about other people's trauma, and there were so many times along the way I said, that's, oh my God, yes, that's me. I've felt that. I've been there. And I started to feel a real, as much as it's like, oh, that's crappy that they went through that and that I went through that, feeling the connection with other survivors has been critical to my own healing, to understand that we've all had these similar coping mechanisms. We all have similar triggers. It's, the health issues. There's so many similarities that you go, it's not just me, and I'm not crazy, and this did happen,
What were some of the things that helped you? Because you talked about your resilience, that helped you make it through some of the darkest days that cloud was really, really heavy on you. What's some of the things that you did internally and then physically for yourself just to be able to get through a day?
That's a really good question. So number one, my conversations with God
Oh.
inside myself. Number one, God, I'm hurting, but I feel your love, right? And I just always felt that. And so number one, that, but number two, music.
Ah.
Music. I mean, music, is so healing. It can be so healing. And to this day, before coming on this program, I was listening to music because it soothes my soul. And so the third thing is comedy. Honestly, it's so funny that you mentioned that before. Comedy, I studied improv comedy, stand-up comedy. I love comedy. I'm a huge Monty Python fan. I love, you know, all of that stuff. So that has been a light in my life. And to remember that there are things that lift us out of our pain, and to not feel hopeless, to not get stuck, right? To feel that we can move through it.
That's fantastic. What type of music? What's something that you listen to every day, or at least once a week? Says, you know, because I have songs that I listen to every day over and over and over. But what type of music lifts you up?
I have very eclectic taste, so I listen to music from all over the world. I love the kora. The kora is an instrument from Africa, from East Africa, like Senegal and Mali. It's the kora is a big gourded instrument that has strings, K-O-R-A. I remember the first time I heard the kora, I was like, what is that? And let me please hear more of it. So I listen to that a lot. It's just a beautiful instrumental, you know, uplifting music. So things like that.
Fantastic. Last minute or two before we close. If somebody is listening right now and you're eyeball to eyeball with them and they're looking in your eyes on the camera right now and they're going through that darkness, haven't told anybody, what would you tell them right now if you had a few minutes to bend their ear?
I would say that the journey is worth it, that it's going to be painful and not easy, and not everyone's going to understand it. But if you're kind to yourself, if you love yourself through this process, you love yourself and you take care of that child that didn't deserve that pain, you take care of that child, you're going to get through this. Use the therapeutic tools. Find a good therapist, get support. Don't share your story with people that don't value it. Pick your people to tell the truth to, and you're going to get through it. There is the light at the end of the tunnel, and you're in a living, shining example of that.
Fantastic. I tell you what, you have a book in you. I can see you on a platform speaking. I can see you doing breakout sessions. I can see you doing trainings. This is going to be huge. I appreciate being the first program that you shared your story to the world to, Adelia. And thank you so much for being here. You are a champion in my mind. And there's no doubt that God has some wonderful things in store for you.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure and honor to be here.
And tell your family, thank you from me for allowing you to spend an hour of your time tonight on the program.
Absolutely.
Tell you what, thanks for being with us. And when the book comes out, let me know, and we'll have you be the first one on to be able to sell the book and tell the world what you've written about. Can't wait.
All right. Thank you so much.
Let's have you on again.
All right.
Thank you so much. Want to let you know that no matter what, as we close the program, that you've gone through, you've seen the very evidence of it tonight. And I love the golden thread story. I love that no matter what, no matter how dark it is, somewhere in that darkness, maybe you can't even see it, but you can reach out and feel it. You can feel it in your heart. You can hear that small little voice. And that's God saying, hang in there. I got your back. Hang in there. You can make it. I'm not gone. I'm here. Don't give up. And just encouraging. So no matter where you're at tonight, lean into the camera right now. And trust me, there's always hope. There's always hope. And as this year ends and another year starts, I want to let you know that Wednesday is the absolute first blank page of a 365-page book for your life. Write a good one, will you? Every day you get a fresh start this coming year. So look at it as something new. Try something new. Share it. talk about it, find somebody you can trust, and you're going to come out on the other side. Just don't give up. There's always hope. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us an awesome 2024. And the best is yet to come in this coming year. Have a safe and prosperous new year. And Delia, thank you so much again for being with us tonight. God bless you. And live from Houston, join us next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Good night. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.